EWA-517, do you want to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We don't want to report.
Ares 31, do you wish to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We want to report one of those either.
Ares 31, do you wish to file a report of any kind? Over.
I wouldn't know what kind of report to file, sir.
Ares 31, me neither.
There 71 Papa Golf, go ahead.
And was there anybody at above us that passed us like 30 seconds ago?
There 71 Papa Golf, negative.
Okay. Stop this. It's a UFO.
Yeah. Hey, it's Merger 295. Yeah, something just passed over. Don't know what it was, but it's at least 2,000-3,000 feet above us. Yeah, it passed right over the top of us.
911.
You guys busy? Did we just call about the UFOs we saw?
Mm-hmm.
They're out there, taking airplanes.
And a dispatch. Bob, I swear to God, 4 calls in on an unidentified object over Liberty.
4 calls.
4 calls on an unidentified flying object.
Let's not take a look. All right, we'll check it out.
Welcome to UFO Chronicles, a place where people share their experiences of the strange and unexplained. If you've had an encounter and would like to be on the show, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com. Hello everyone and welcome to the show, wherever in the world you are listening from. I hope you're all doing okay. I'm Nick Hunter and this is UFO Chronicles Podcast. We are joined by 3 guests this episode. We first meet Ian in the United Kingdom to share his UFO experience from 1996, while night fishing with a friend. Then we hop over the pond to Thomas in Connecticut and hear about his encounter back in the early 1980s, when Thomas and 3 others were harassed by a numerous unearthly crafts. Then finally, we are joined by Brian in California to hear about his UFO encounter in Dubai while working as a contractor for the United States Air Force in 2015. Ian up next. If you enjoy listening to the podcast and would like to help support my work, there is a couple of ways to do this. Either you can join Patreon and become a patron of the show for as little as $5 a month, or you can donate via PayPal, and if you like, you can set up monthly reoccurring payments. All links to support the podcast are below in the show notes and on the website. Any help is extremely appreciated, and it helps the show to continue running. Now, on with the show. Hello, Ian. Welcome to the show.
Hello, Nick.
How are you doing? Calling from Norfolk in the UK.
Yeah, very well, thank you, and thank you for having me on.
You're more than welcome, Ian. Now, you're going to be sharing a UFO experience you had from the 90s. Would you like to start at the beginning, please?
Yeah, the experience happened on June 15th, 1996, and I was 20 years old at the time. What happened that day was I was planning to go fishing, or I did go fishing the next day, June the 16th, and myself and my friend stayed over at the local reservoir, and we were sort of just basically having something to eat, and it was about 11:30 p.m. We were sitting there after we'd had like a cup of coffee and a chat, and I was looking out over the reservoir, which is slightly raised up on a hill. We were sitting at the bottom of it, and to the right in the sky was a round, bright object in the distance. And as I was watching it, I thought it might be a satellite or something of that ilk. And as I was watching it, I said to Dylan, my friend, have a look over there. And he had a look, and I said, that's strange. I said, that looks like it's got a flight pattern. And it was moving in basically a diagonal formation or zigzagging across the sky slowly as we were watching it. And then I said to him, give me the torch, which was on the floor next to us, and he passed me the torch. And I said, well, I'll just try to signal it just for a bit of fun, because we're obviously watching it with some interest. So I was turning the torch on and off slowly, not thinking anything of it really at the time. And after I'd stopped indicating with a torch, whatever it was, just stopped completely dead in the sky. It didn't move. And then we were sort of getting quite excited. Whatever, what is it? What, you know, it's taken some interest. And then it started coming towards us. It must have been coming to us fairly slowly, but it's obviously getting bigger. So we were watching it, then we were getting quite excited. And oh, if it gets near enough, we'll see what it is. And with a bit of apprehension and a little bit scared at the same time, sort of waiting for it to get nearer. And then suddenly there was like a sonic boom overhead where two fighters went over in the direction of it. And then I looked out across the reservoir where it was again as I turned back, and I could just see it disappear sort of off the horizon. So from the moment I'd looked up to looking back, it had gone out of sight. And then the fighters took a little bit longer to chase it. They were obviously gone supersonic when they went over, or broke the speed of sound. So, yeah, and that shook us up a little bit, and but it substantiated the fact that, yeah, it was something a little bit different that they had scrambled those fighters to go and check it out. And then for the rest of the night after that, there was an AWACS flying around the area and into the early morning. And, yeah, that's my story.
Were you camping out in the area, or was that the fishing location local to you?
I lived in the town house close to the reservoir. And we only reason we were, well, basically it was just sleeping in the car, but we'd take a gas stove and some food and something to drink. Now, we was getting there early just to get the best fishing swims the next morning. That was purely the reason we were there. So, yeah, that was what happened. Otherwise, we'd have gone in the morning, but for some reason, I was a bit younger then, we sort of have a camp out, you know, have a cup of coffee and a chat, and yeah, so get started really early so I didn't have to load everything up early in the morning and get out there.
Yeah, get to those fishes early.
Yeah, that's right. I was quite keen those days.
In the younger days.
Yeah, it was just one of those spare moment things. If, you know, in hindsight, we would have got a good swim anyway, because we'd have been up there pretty early. Not as many people turned up as before. I think we were under the illusion it was going to be packed and we'd struggle to get where we wanted to be, but that wasn't the case. But in hindsight, I'm glad we did go and stay over. I wouldn't have seen what I saw.
Exactly.
So, yeah, it was just in the right place at the right time, so to speak.
When you first saw it, what kind of height was it at?
High, quite high. I mean, a few hundred feet, I guess. And when it came in, when it was as big as it got before it actually went off, when the fighters went over, it seemed to have dropped a little bit from where it started when we originally saw it in the distance. So it would have probably been, I don't know, 100 feet high when I last saw it, 150.
Okay, so when you first saw it, was it just moving on a linear path?
Yeah, when I first saw it, I thought it was just like I didn't know what it could have been, a plane or anything. Like, yeah, it was on a linear path, and then it started to deviate on a zigzag sort of route, which was very odd.
Yeah, it is very odd. And you reached for the torch, and then you started to flash the object.
Yeah, that's right. I don't know why I did it. The only reason was I was so interested. It was strange, and it seemed like a bit of fun at the time, being a bit younger, to do it and just see what happened. And then astonishingly, something did happen. And like I said to Dylan after it happened at the time, a friend who was with me, basically, if it was anything man-made, why would it have taken any interest in it? Which is a little bit daunting at the same time.
Exactly, yeah.
Mm.
And then you flashed it, then it stopped mid-flight.
Yeah, it just stops. I mean, it's nothing that I know of up and sort of drone technology now and that can just stop like that. So yeah, it was quite strange, and there was no noise either. So yeah, it was completely silent. Obviously it wasn't silent until the planes came, and then for those to go supersonic, it's quite near a built up area. I don't think they're even supposed to. So obviously with some urgency.
Yeah, I think there's some circumstances, you know, obviously I think they can if there's an emergency of some sort.
Yeah. So the fact that they obviously scrambled those made the account quite interesting, and don't forget that. So I thought it would be nice to share it with people just because it was a little bit out of the ordinary. I mean, it's not a normal, you know, you don't hear many accounts like that.
No, it's not the normal thing. You know, so you've gone fishing for a nice, nice quiet day.
Mm.
It's the last thing you'd expect to see.
Yeah, it was quite shocking.
That evening, the sentry plane was flying around.
Yeah, after that happened, there was an AWACS sort of flying around all night with the radar on it. So obviously keeping surveillance of the area. So that obviously rang a few alarm bells, so to speak. I mean, I would ponder a little bit. I did at the time afterwards, but I kind of put the incident to bed after it happened and went carried on with my fishing. And I didn't have a particularly deep interest in the subject of UFOs. So I just took it for what it was, an interesting account, and left it there until recently. And I've got a little bit more into the subject, watched a few programs. I thought, well, it's quite interesting. It'd be nice to share it. So it seemed wrong to keep it to myself.
No, absolutely no. It's important to share it, you know. It's unusual. The fighter jets, I mean, they were scrambled. They'd obviously picked something up on radar, were scrambled, and were looking for something. And you said, did you see the planes or hear them first?
I didn't see them. I heard them as they broke the sound band, as they went over. They boomed.
Right.
And that was the first time they were going, well, extremely quickly when they went over. And then I looked up as that boom, saw them overhead and sort of go. And then as I looked, obviously my vision came down. And that's what I just saw, the object just disappearing on the horizon. So from the point of me looking up to looking back to where it had been, it had gone out of sight just about. It was, yeah, going fairly quick.
Yeah, that's quick. If 1 minute you're looking at it and it all of a sudden it's on its way over the horizon.
I mean, what's the horizon? It's 10 miles, I don't know, I guess. Something like that. So yeah, to get that sort of distance in that time.
And this sighting particularly piqued your interest in the subject, because you had no interest in it really before.
No, I mean, I think everyone's got a mild interest in it, and you can never not be interested in an experience happening to you like that. So it was interesting for what it happened, for what it was. But recently I've watched the Bob Lazar documentary, which was particularly interesting. I actually found him quite believable in that, and after listening to it, it sort of made me a little bit more interested in the subject, and watching various programs on the universe in general, and you comprehend how small we are and the size of it, and you know how many other systems there are out there, and there's got to be other things or species that are ahead of us. So it's possible. That's what I saw, but who knows?
You're absolutely right. Yeah, I mean, we're very small in comparison to the universe.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I've tried to pass it off scientifically, but I can't think, well, I don't know of anything man-made that could do what I saw. If it's early technology, it's nothing we know about.
I don't know if anything in the late 90s like that.
Yeah, I mean, this was 96. I mean, if you think even early drone technology, but why would anything respond to a torch? I mean, if it's being tested, that's also what substantiated as being odd. I mean, the worrying part of that is if they were responding to the torch or whatever it was, what was its intention? It would have been interesting to have seen it a bit better if they hadn't been intercepted, but, you know, it is what it is, really. That's what happened.
I mean, you can certainly discount a drone because obviously the year for a start. And
yeah, exactly.
If it was a drone that was reacting to your torch, then therefore it would have had a camera on there. And if you remember what cameras were like in 96, old-fashioned camera recorders were huge. So
yeah, and I mean, it kind of discounts anything we had. So yeah, with all those things taken into account, it's quite strange.
Unexplained.
Yes, it'd have been nice to have had a little bit longer looking back on it now, though, just to have had a better look at it. That's the only thing maybe if they hadn't turned up at all, would that have been a good thing? Who knows?
Exactly, that could be something entirely, it could have been a completely entirely different account. Yeah. You know, you flash your torch and it's stopped. Mm. Now it's approaching you.
Yeah, I know. It was quite worrying at the time, actually. We were excited and on edge. But I remember saying to my friend, I said, well, look, it's great, we're going to see what it is. But I think we were both a little bit worried at the same time because it was very strange what was happening.
Any idea roughly which direction it came from? It'd be just interesting if it actually came to you from the east, then it may have been picked up on radar out to sea as it approached the UK airspace.
It would have been coming towards us from sort of Stanway, so it would have been from the sea. Yeah, it would have been from sort of Colchester, that sort of side.
Okay, right.
Because we're out, or the reservoir is out house going towards Braintree that way. So yeah, it would have been sort of Colchester, Stanway sort of way.
Yeah. So, I mean, it could have been picked up in airspace, the UK airspace as it approached, and then you'd seen it. And then these jets had obviously been scrambled, and then that was it. It was gone.
Yeah, quite a strange experience.
I know you probably haven't reported it, but doesn't matter when or how historic the actual sighting is, you can still report it. There's always a chance that other people have reported it as well. These days, it's pointless calling the local military base and say, hey, listen, did you pick this up on radar? Because even if they did, they'd flat out lie to you in any case. So,
you know, I didn't think I'd get any joy from them, admit. What can stop dead in the sky, you know, and not move, apart from a Harrier hovering or something like that? But then that wasn't a Harrier.
No, it didn't know. You'd know if it was a Harrier or not.
Exactly. You know, if it was a plane. It had no plane light, and it was just a round, bright light. That's what it looked like. I couldn't see any detail to it, apart from it was a round, sort of bright light. So I was hoping it would get closer to have a look at it properly. But from the distance we were at, we couldn't really see any more than that.
Yeah, it's just a shame, isn't it? The RAF spoilt that for you.
Yeah, I'd love to say it looked like a saucer or something. It may have done. Well, I never know now.
You know, did you have a good catch, though?
Yeah, I did, actually. I got the best carp I caught at that particular time next day. So, yeah, that made up for it a little bit.
That's good, then.
So, yeah, it was all right. But now, I've always tried to sort of reason, palm it off as something that I can explain, but you just can't, really, what happened. It's just too many sort of red flags with it.
And it's often the case, yeah. I mean, there's certain things we can throw out and say, you know, this is probably what you saw. You know, this is, you know, you saw Venus, or you saw a drone, or you saw some balloons. Then there's other things you can't. I mean, the zigzagging alone is.
Well, that was the strange, that's what highlighted it in the first place. I mean, but, you know, why was it zigzagging to get attention? Was it, why was it flying like that anyway? It's not the best way to get from A to B, is it?
No, I mean, unless you're searching for something.
Exactly. I don't know. Or was it trying to get attention? Who knows, whatever, or what it was doing. It was, yeah, that was very odd.
When you flashed in with a torch, I have their attention.
Well, yeah, I mean, didn't expect anything of it, to be honest. For it to take an interest was doubly strange on top of what was already happening. And then, obviously, with the fighters coming in, that made another red flag. So then it all points to it being, yeah, something a little bit different.
Well, it's very unique, and you know, you're probably always going to be thinking, you know, what was it? And that's always going to probably play on your mind now.
I mean, the comforting thing about it, in a way, is it's opened the eyes a little bit to not saying, oh, well, they don't exist, or that, you know, there can't be anything else, because I know what I saw, and that opens the possibilities that it was something odd, or it was a UFO, or an alien craft, who knows?
Yeah, you know, when you hear other people's accounts now, you think, well, you know, I saw something strange.
Yeah, you can take it on board.
Exactly, yeah, it's easy to accept. Because at the end of the day, you know, it's not just crazy local drunks hanging around the town centre screaming about aliens, you know. People see these things every day.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I consider myself to be fairly down to earth, and yeah, it's not something I really want to come out of. It just seemed that different. If it had just been a light in the sky and flying about all different colour, I probably wouldn't ever have said anything about it. It's just it had so many strange things happen that night that I thought I'd best share it, really, and hopefully, you know, someone else saw it, or and someone else might come out of it. Who knows.
Great job. That's wonderful, Ian. I really appreciate you coming on today and sharing that for our listeners.
Thanks, Nick. Thanks for having me on, and I hope people enjoy it.
Absolutely, yeah. Thank you for coming on. That's wonderful, Ian. Okay,
all right, thanks, Nick.
No problem. You have a good night now, Ian.
And you, cheers. Bye-bye.
The 40N Film Festival is a new celebration of cinema, created by people who have a passion for all things weird and paranormal. The current season is now open for submissions. Get involved if you're a filmmaker that has a penchant for poltergeists and adores aliens. Or if you're a producer devoted to demonology, with a soft spot for sci-fi. The deadline for submissions to this IMDb-approved festival is fast approaching. Go to fortianfilmfestival.com to submit your film or buy tickets, if you dare.
Hello, Thomas, and welcome to the show.
Hello, Nick. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for coming on today, Thomas. Calling from Connecticut.
Yes, Brantford, Connecticut.
Okay. Now, Thomas, your experience occurred in the early 1980s. Would you like to start at the very beginning, please, sir?
Sure. So myself and three friends were we were just driving around in an old Tornado. It was, I guess it wasn't that old at the time. It was probably a couple of years old at the time. And it was sort of our nightly thing to just go cruising around looking for girls or what have you. You know, we just like to drive around, listen to music. And at the time, I think we were all hovering around 16 years old. My friend Gary, he's the one who was driving the car. And my best friend, Gary, another Gary, was in the back seat with me. And there was another friend, Frank, in the passenger seat. And we parked at a place called Cosgrove's Pit. And it's where they take landfill out to cover, you know, road work and things like that around town. And I'm pretty sure back then they used a lot of the land to cap off the landfill that we were facing at the time. It was the Brantford town landfill. We were just sitting there. I think we were actually trying to light a little marijuana joint that Frank had, that he had just plucked the wet leaves off of his plant and tried to dry them, and it was still wet, wouldn't light. So there goes the possibility of us being altered in any way, because we couldn't get that lit. So we're just sitting there listening to music, I guess. And suddenly Frank yells out really loud, "What the heck are those things over the dump?" We called it the dump. And we saw four to five, I think it was five, vehicles zipping. And when I say zipping, I mean like a ping pong ball bouncing off of, you know, walls back and forth, just zipping around. And this is going to sound really strange, but we saw these pencil thin, I can only describe them as laser beams following or shooting at each other. And, you know, when one would pass the other, the beam would actually follow it. And they were different colors, and the colors were colors that I, you know, it's like I update the colors now to what we have now, you know, neon style colors. And this happened for about 5 minutes. And all of a sudden, Gary, the driver, decides to flash his headlights towards them. And I'd say that they were off in a distance of about a quarter of a mile. And as soon as he flashed the lights, one of the craft came right over the car on my side, the passenger side. And it couldn't have been more than 35 to 40 feet above the car. It sat there for about, I'd say, a good 20 seconds. And Frank and I, and both of us were on the passenger side, we were just mesmerized by this thing. It was oval shaped, and it could have been the angle of it. It could have been a craft, you know, like the saucer shaped, but at the angle of it, it looked oval. And it was sectioned off. And all I can describe is that there was colors, the same colors that they were shooting at each other, the lasers were coming in and out of different sections of it, like melting into each other. And it just didn't have an ominous feeling about it, but it didn't have a good feeling in my mind. I can't describe it now. It was so long ago. But it sat there for that period of time, like 20 seconds, and zipped back over to the other ones. And we were awestruck. That's the only thing I can think of. But that's not the end of it. We were telling Gary, please, let's get out of here. We don't know what these things are. And he started the car up and we started to come out of Cosgrove's pit, which was lower than the road, than the street. And there was a gravel, like a bridge going down into the pit. So as we were leaving, which was, less than, a couple of thousand feet to get out to the entrance, all of them were looking behind us, me and Gary in the back seat. We were looking behind us, and all of these things came together, and it was as though they snapped together like Legos and started lighting up like the sun. I mean, it lit up the whole area. And Gary, the driver, couldn't see because it was behind us. So he decided to turn around up on the road, come back in down on this bridge. That's all I can describe it of as a bridge. It's just a dirt, where they dumped a bunch of gravel there to make a road into the pit. He turns the car around up there, parks the car on an incline about halfway down this bridge. And we're all watching this thing lit up like the sun in front of us. A beam, a shaft of light hit the hood of the car, and everything in it was something out of Close Encounters. It was spot on, Close Encounters of the Third Kind. When I saw that movie, it really reminded me of that. And I don't think I had seen it at the time. Shaft of light hit the hood of the car, and everything in the car, including us, where everything, the electrical system, was going haywire. And suddenly, and Gary had shut the car off. And I think he put the emergency brake on too. And when that shaft hit the car started going backwards, uphill, in reverse, like a tractor beam of some sort. And that's when we started really freaking out, because there was gears grinding in the car. This went on for like 20 seconds too, and then all of a sudden, bam, it just went away. There was no light in the sky, everything was quiet again, and we all just he started the car and we started driving out of there. And that's the end of that story right there. So I don't know what to say about it, but it's the truth. And I wish I could get two of the guys to talk with you about this too, but I don't think they're willing to. So that's my story, and I'm sticking with it.
Sticking with it. That's interesting, Thomas. When the one object was above the car, so it was 35 feet above the car, and you could see it at the back passenger window, how big would you have said that the object was?
I'd say it was no bigger than 20 feet around, 20 feet in, length of the oval, the bigger part of the oval. It looked like it was the size of a minibus, the kind that transports people around, like a minibus. That's all I can. It was a long time ago, I have to say. So my recollection is a little off.
Yeah, you'd be excused for that. It was quite a while ago. So like an oval shape. So it's kind of like a propane tank type.
Yes, propane, maybe with a little bit more of an egg. I don't think. That shape. It was something else. I still have it in my mind. The colors that melted into each other, swirling around in it. All the different colors that were in it. I had never seen those colors at the time. How over the years the colors had started to get brighter, in everyday life. There was no neon colors back then like there is now. You understand what I'm saying about that?
Yeah, the 80s could have been, yeah, the 80s were quite dull color wise.
That's what I'm saying. There was no real neon colors like there is now. And it was really trippy to see those kind of colors at that time.
Everything from the 70s and 80s seemed to have been like dull yellows and dull browns, and that was about it.
And greens.
Right. Right. Now, the lasers, what color were the lasers? What were you seeing?
Every color of every single color. I mean, the colors that I don't think I've ever seen at the time, you know, they were just all different colors. And like I said, the vehicle, these colors were swirling in and out of each other, just melting into each other. There was like sections, though. It was like, how can I describe it? Like a world globe, the longitude and latitude lines were, you know, I think there was a line around the dead center of it, around it, and then latitude lines, if you can understand with that. And the colors were just going in and out of each one of those lines. It's hard to describe.
So actually on the object it had these lines, and then the light was shooting around actually on the object.
Yes, shooting around inside of, you know, it looked like it was like some kind of glass or ceramic, you know, it looked like there was a light beneath all of it. And then these things were just swirling around the exterior of it, you know, closer to the surface. And it didn't have a major glow to it at the, you know, it wasn't bright. You know, it wasn't a bright object. When it zipped back to the other ones and they all came together, we were watching it in the back seat. It looked like something out of, I mean, just surreal. And when they all snapped together, it looked like they all clicked together somehow and lit up the sky. Oh, by the way, the next day, I was so freaked out by this. I wanted some answers. And I went to the local police station in Brantford, and I went and I talked to a sergeant or a detective who was on duty that could talk to me. And I asked him, I said, did you guys get any calls last night for lights over near the dump or Cosgrove's pit? And he said, yeah, everybody must have been drinking last night over there because we got a bunch of calls in saying there's lights over Cosgrove's pit. And that kind of, that made me feel better. That was one thing that made me feel better. So that was some kind of, relevance or thought of, you know, something definitely happened, you know, cause I was doubting myself.
But bearing in mind, I mean, there was four of you, but it's good that, you know, someone had obviously put a call into the police station, so those other people that saw it. It's a shame it maybe didn't make the news as well, because that would have been even even better.
Yeah. And I talked to my best friend that was in the back seat with me. He's since passed about 20 years now. And I would talk to him about it occasionally. And you know, I guess it depends on how you're brought up. You know, this is kind of paranormal stuff and people don't like talking about it, and you know, because there's doubt in your own mind of, you know, if it's really happened to you to see something like this. But I did talk to Frank, the one that was with me, and while I was speaking with him, I guess he had me on speakerphone. This is like 5 years ago, and his wife overheard us talking to each other, and she told him to hang up the phone when I brought up the subject. So, and he did. He just plain out hung up on me. And I've tried to call him a half a dozen times to talk about it, hoping to catch him when his wife wasn't around so we could talk about it. And he never answered his phone again. So the driver, Gary, the other Gary, I did speak with him a couple of years ago about it. We talked about it, and he says, he told me, he says, or he asked me if I remember the car moving. He said that he had the emergency brake on and the car was off. And I said, you're damn right, I remember it moving. that's what scared us all half to death. You know, the car moving when it was off. It felt like a, it felt like we were kind of floating, you know, just a weird feeling. I just remember a weird feeling when the shaft of light hit the car. But that's all I remember. I don't remember everything, because it was so, you know, like I said, it was almost 40 years ago. A very, very strange experience.
So when Gary the driver, he was driving away, did he get to turn the car around to take a look at the objects again? Or did the shaft of light hit it from the rear?
No, we were on the angle on the angle of the road going down into it, and it hit the, he did get to see it, yes. And we were, I remember Gary in the back with me, we were trying to see out the front windshield to see it, but we didn't have a very good view. So he did have a good view of it. And that's when, as soon as he stopped the car and turned it off, the shaft of light hit. But I'm pretty sure he saw it. He must have. But it was so bright that, yeah, I don't know. I don't remember looking straight into it. I just remember all of the area around us completely lit up like it was daylight out. And then the shaft hit the hood of the car.
And then the car started to move.
It moved in reverse up the hill backwards. So that's the strangest part about it. You would think it would have pulled it towards, you know, going down, but the car actually went uphill in reverse. And I don't know how far it went, because I didn't get out of the car, of course, at that time. And then it just bleeped out instantly, and it was gone, you know. So
then you hightailed it out of there.
Yeah, we got out of there as fast as we could. And I remember some of the conversation, you know, don't tell anybody. We can't tell anybody about this. Nobody would ever believe us. But I wanted some answers. I wanted to know what the heck it was. And I was never a person that, you know, thought about this kind of stuff, paranormal stuff or UFOs or anything like that. I never cared about it, never thought about it. But now I sure do. I do a lot of research on it. It's on my mind constantly for some reason. You know, I want to know what else is out there. I want to know what they are.
I mean, you all had a very, you know, very unusual event happen. And if it doesn't make sense, you know, your brain's always going to be trying to work out, you know, what happened. You know, your brain always wants the answers.
Especially with four of us. You know, I thought I was alone in it, but there was four of us there. So I know it was real. To my recollection, it, the way I told it is exactly the way it happened. You know, so I'm not trying to embellish anything. That's exactly the way it happened. And some of my thoughts were, you know, there's a lot of toxic stuff in the landfills. And I wonder if they were just looking at, you know, looking around and seeing what kind of toxins. I have no idea. They could have been here for thousands of years, and I really don't know. There's no answers.
And you remained in Bradford?
Oh, no. I went to Miami for 25 years. That's where I was born, in Miami, Florida. And I went down there to work with my brothers, who are all down there, four brothers. Stayed down there, and now I'm back in Bradford. Something compelled me to come back up here. I really don't even know what it was that made me come back up here. You know, there's a lot more work up here for somebody like me. I'm a carpenter, not the most educated person in the world, you know, educated enough, you know, to not be a, you know, on the streets.
Right.
Per se.
Keep working. And is Gary the driver and Frank still in the same town?
Gary's actually in Florida, central Florida, around Disney. Around the Disney area. And I think Frank is in New Haven, Connecticut, where Yale is.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, I'd like to try to find him again. Maybe I can catch him without his wife around. You know how people get it. People get like that.
Yeah, some people don't want anything to do with it. You know, they just want to either forget about it or just distance themselves away.
That's the impression I had when I spoke to Frank last. But Gary was a little bit more open. But I think he possibly has a lot of stuff going on with him as far as health.
Okay, so we have So you spoke to the police about it, and they were a little bit blasé. They said they'd received some other reports in.
Yeah, and he didn't go into any detail. He just said everybody must be drinking over there. Everybody must have been drinking over there last night, and that was it. You know, I really don't worry so much about that, about validation anymore. You know, I'm glad glad there's people that know the truth. And I'm sure you've heard stories that, you know, are similar to mine that are, you know, you can tell that people are just, you know, telling the truth, plain and simple. I have no reason to tell a story like this or make up some kind of story like this for any reason. You know, it's not like I'm going to make any money off of it or anything. So for me to make up a story like this and put it on a podcast would be completely ridiculous. I'm sure you agree with that.
Yeah, and I hear these accounts every day, Thomas.
Really bizarre, I'm sure. Bizarre, but
I'm not going to lie. Yeah, and people have these experiences. People have these experiences all over the world, Thomas.
I'm happy to hear that.
If you had a chance to relive that day, would you?
Yes, absolutely. With what, you know, what I know, what little I know now, I'd love to relive it, you know, just to see, just to try to be more perceptive about it, you know, try to learn more about it without the panic that we had. Yes, I think anybody would want to relive that because we weren't hurt. You know, there was nothing hurt us. And I don't think we were abducted, but I don't know. Like, you know, we could have been. But I don't think so. I really don't. Not like other people's accounts. I've heard of other accounts where they've been abducted and then released, you know, 10 miles down the road or a couple of miles down the road. I don't think that was the case. I think we were all too crazy for them to take us. We were a crazy bunch.
How old were you at the time?
16. 15 or 16, I can't remember exactly. But I know it was in the summertime. I was probably just about to turn 16.
Right, right. It's a good time to be alive. Driving around in the tunnel, they were listening to the music.
Yep, that's what we were doing. And it just kind of happened. You know, we weren't looking for anything in particular, and it just happened. And I'm glad it did.
Glad it did. The dump, is it still there now and it still remains in the same...
No, it's actually a park now. They call it Ecology Park. And what they did was they covered it with a good amount of soil, and they put these pipes down through it to leak the gas out, so, you know, slowly.
Right. Yeah. But gotcha.
It's a huge, if you look it up, it has to be, I'd say 80 to 100 feet high. And it's covered with grass now, and there's a, on top of it, there's a picnic area, and it's the highest point in Brantford. So
I'll take a look at that then. I'll have a look.
Yeah, and actually, the pit is a park now too, a walking park, and they have a whole bunch of dishes in there for an electric grid.
Okay.
Yeah, it's changed completely, but it's still, the pit kind of looks like the same, except for there's little roadways in there for pedestrians to walk through and bicycles. That hasn't changed much really, but the dump sure has, the landfill. They covered it up with sod and made it look like a mountain. So.
Right. Okay.
There's been a lot of stuff like this in Connecticut. A lot of, especially, and in New York State, up in the Hudson Valley, I'm sure you've heard of those, the Hudson Valley cases.
Yeah, I get a lot of guests from that area. All over the United States, really. And yeah, one of my guests a couple of months ago, she witnessed the object up there.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And
that was a very colorful craft, too, from what I heard. You know, the colors were around it, but it was big. It was huge. So, and that happened around the same time as mine. So is what we witnessed in the 80s.
Yeah. And I think hers was the same. I think hers is either 1983 or 1984, if I remember.
Yeah.
So wonderful. Okay.
Thank you for what you're doing, by the way. This was really great. And I'm sorry you have to work by yourself, but I'm sure you want it to edit it the way you want. And, to make sure the stories are told. And it's really a great thing you're doing for people like me, like myself.
Exactly. And yeah, personally, I'd rather do it on my own. I've had offers from people that would help with the editing or help with the emails, and I can't do it. It would be impossible. Logistically, it'd be impossible. But personally, I don't want, because I get a lot of sensitive information from people. You know, I know where people live. I know their names. I know their ages and all that kind of stuff. Just that alone, I don't want to get into anyone's hands. Let alone their accounts, you know. So I'd rather just deal with it every myself, that at least that way it's done the way I want it done. And if people don't like anything of the show, then that's on me, that is, and no one else.
Yeah, I really appreciate what you do, and I hope we can speak again someday. I know you probably speak to thousands of people a month. Or
I must admit, I do. Yeah, I get a lot of messages from people like daily. But I'm always, like I said, I'm always on the messenger in any case, Thomas. So feel free to reach out anytime. That's not a problem.
All right. Sounds good to me.
Well, Thomas, I really appreciate you coming on and sharing that for our listeners.
Okay. All right. Likewise. Thanks.
Okay.
Have a nice evening.
You too, Thomas. Take care. Introducing the High Strangeness Coffee Blend by Redacted Coffee Company, a medium roast of the Brazilian kind. This medium roast offers flavors of chocolate and vanilla combined with a distinct fruity taste and a unique sweet floral aroma. The experience of High Strangeness doesn't end there, with a sweet butter aftertaste that doesn't fade as your coffee cools. This coffee regains its flavors all the way through your cup, ensuring it truly is good to the last drop. The veteran-funded, employee-owned Redacted Coffee Company and UFO Chronicles podcast have partnered together to bring you the best coffee on and off the planet. Get 20% off your first order now at redactedcoffee.com/UFO. That's redactedcoffee.com/UFO. Or follow the link below in this episode's description or click on the banner of my website. This podcast is fueled by coffee oozing high strangeness. So what are you waiting for? Wake up to the strange. Hello, Brian, and welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us today, calling from California this morning.
Yes, beautiful Temecula.
Beautiful, beautiful. Now, you have a sighting to share from 2015. Would you like to let listeners know what you were doing and what you saw, please, sir?
Yeah, I was living and working in Dubai at the time, and I was on my way to work. I saw something in the air, and it was just, I didn't know what it was. And I got to work, and I parked, and I got out of my car, and it was still there. And I've never seen anything like it before. The shape was kind of, it was long and round, but it looked like the end of the craft was like cut off. And it had like a hole in the center. So it kind of looked like a long donut. And it was very strange. And so I got out my phone and I took a few pictures, and it just sat there. So I started recording it, video, you know. And then my video went out, my phone went out, and I had to restart my phone. So I restarted the phone and I started taking pictures again. And then I did some more video and my phone went out again. I must have restarted my phone about three times. And I got about 20 minutes of video footage of the craft and several pictures. And I'm just watching it. And all of a sudden, it's like, it turned. It rotated. It was standing in one space, but it just rotated around. That's the picture that was on the news in Dubai. Well, anyway, when it rotated, it looked more like looked more like a pill, or what they call a tic tac. And it just, all of a sudden, it disappeared. I mean, it was there in front of my eyes, and then it was just gone. I can't explain it. I worked as a contractor for the Air Force, and I've seen many craft, and I just couldn't identify it. So I showed it around to the people in the office. There were other people that saw it too. Then I decided to turn over all of the pictures and video to MUFON. So I uploaded everything, and one of the investigators called me, and he emailed each other. And he did some analysis on the video and the pictures, and there was definitely something there. And one thing that he noticed that I didn't notice at the time is that my phone kept going out, and I never thought about electronic interference until the MUFON investigator mentioned that to me. Apparently, this is very common in sightings of UAPs, UFOs. So anyway, that's my story.
Wonderful. Okay. So when you first saw it, was it actually in movement or was it already stationary?
No, it was already stationary. And I was about 100 miles from the nearest airport. So it wasn't like I was close to an airport and, there was some planes or something. This thing was stationary. And when I saw it, I mean, I could see it better. I could get a better picture of it with my eyes than I could using my phone. The optics of the phones aren't very good. So I was able to see it much better than my phone recorded it.
In the image, it looks dark. Was that what your eyes were seeing?
It was metallic. There seemed to be some type of heat coming off of it. I when I was looking at it, I was thinking, why is it just sitting there over the desert? There's nothing there. Is it stalled? Is it having some mechanical issues? Or, I didn't know. It was just hovering. It's very strange to me.
I mean, of course, the only thing that really hovers in one location is a helicopter, and it's unusual for a helicopter to be stationary for 20 minutes alone. So it's unusual. And the area where you were, basically in the desert, so there was nothing really too much around.
No, there was nothing around, nothing for miles and miles. I actually, in some of the pictures, you'll see landmarks. And so I knew where these landmarks were located, and I triangulated the location and the size of the craft. And it was approximately 25 meters. I don't know if that's considered big or small, but anyway.
And you said you were a contractor for the United States Air Force?
Yes. From 2001 until 2013, I was an environmental engineer and also an environmental program manager.
And I know you reported to MUFON, but did you report it to anyone else, including the Air Force?
No, I didn't. Who do you report? I've had friends that's reported things. For example, I used to live in Qatar, and there was some friends of mine who are flight engineers, and they were test flying some of the new, well, they're not new anymore, but the Dreamliners. And they saw a UFO about the size of a football field. And the two pilots, the pilot and the co-pilot, basically were suspended from their job and had to undergo psych evaluations because they reported it. Now, the engineers in the back of the plane, they saw it too, but they kept their mouths shut. They didn't say anything. So this is what happens. And I knew people in the Air Force that had seen things, but nobody is about to report it. It's just something you don't do.
I mean, apparently now it's okay, and they're happily welcome all these reports of these sightings now. But yeah, but before it was a very different story. They'd literally have pilots flying a desk if they did report anything like this.
Exactly. I'm so happy that people can talk about it now, and there's the Pentagon has confirmed some of these sightings. It's very exciting now.
It is. You're absolutely right, and hopefully there'll be a lot more military individuals that will come forward now, because, you know, without the fear of, you know, losing pensions or disability or being made a fool of, because there's a lot out there. I get a lot of emails from ex-servicemen that just want to tell me, but they don't want to put the account out there. They don't want to be on the show. They just really want to tell me. So they are right there, that's for sure.
Yeah, exactly. You're exactly right. I have several friends in the Air Force that have told me things, and they're not reported. They weren't reporting it at the time. But like you said, things have changed now, and I hope these people can come forward now with their stories.
What the US government has come out and said, hopefully that's not just for show and that's not just for the public. You know, hopefully it's also happening behind the scenes as well. But it's good, because for every one witness that comes forward, you know, that would then bring several others. So that's what we need. We need more people coming forward. You know, that's what we need.
Yeah. You know, what I found interesting is that when my story was posted in the news in Dubai, which I didn't give my story to the press there, they were actually going on to MUFON and they were reading about UFO sightings in Dubai. And they saw my pictures and my videos, and they decided to write this story. They didn't ask me any questions, and they put a lot of just garbage into that story. But, you know, I was surprised that they were going through, media was going through MUFON's website and looking for stories.
Yeah, they do that. I mean, it was the Express, that's the UK version. And like most UK tabloid newspapers, they usually are full of shit. They add stuff to it and they make a joke of it. So yeah, it's not uncommon for journalists over here to do that. That's why a lot of ufologists would tend to avoid the newspapers when they can, especially credible ufologists. They will avoid these newspapers. I can't speak for all of them, but you know, because of the way these journalists operate.
Right.
And Brian, was this the first time you personally had ever seen anything unexplained?
No. When I was in my early 20s, I was at a friend's house. We saw something we couldn't explain. And several of the people that lived in the neighborhood called the police. A report was filed with the police. So that was my first time seeing something strange in the sky. And even now, I don't know what I was looking at. But that was witnessed by several people. And in the news, you know, even in that city right now, there are several people that still see this craft. I mean, even up till this past year, that same craft has been reported. And I don't know what it is about that area, but I've seen that craft. You know, probably over 100 people have seen that craft. That was my first time seeing something that I couldn't explain. But it was, you know, a lot of people saw that. Just like in Dubai, a lot of people saw that craft also. And when the newspaper article came out, you know, you have the comment section. Some people commented in the section that they saw it too. When they read the article and they saw all the picture, that, you know, I was driving down Sheikh Zayed Boulevard and I saw this same craft. So, I think a lot of people were looking up. And I think it's very, I don't think it's as uncommon as people think for others to see these craft and sky.
Yeah, a lot more people are looking up, and it's good. You know, I always tell people, get off your phones, put it in your pocket and look up. You know, there certainly is a lot to see up there. And during your time in Dubai, did you ever hear of any other sightings out there, any other accounts?
Yes. One of my good friends allegedly saw the same craft that I saw in the same area. And he told me about it. And he was wondering, what are the odds of seeing that craft in the same area? And, you know, I didn't see it at the time he saw it. But, yeah, there have been other people that saw this craft in that area.
It is unusual that, you know, your phone was having problems. And you're right, you know, what the investigator from MUFON did say, that it's very common that people have electronic problems with their devices when they do try and record these objects.
Yeah, and, you know, I wouldn't have even thought about it until the investigator pointed that out to me, because I guess he was reviewing the footage, you know, and he's asking me questions, and just never occurred to me, because I was just, you know, gobsmacked in there looking at this thing in the sky, and I was like, you know, just thrilled with what I was seeing, that, you know, I wasn't thinking about, hey, I'm getting some electronic interference here. I was like, how can I get my phone back on, because I really need to record this.
And the object, you said it was just a metallic color. Did you remember seeing any lights on the object at all?
No, the object didn't have any lights whatsoever on it. No, none. In the middle of the craft, though, you could see like some heat vapor, you know, going into the atmosphere. No light. It just looked like a metallic object. I've always wondered, though, about, you know, people that see UFOs with light. Why do you need lights to fly around if you come from another place, from another system or whatever? You know, why would you need lights? Crazy question that, you know, always comes to mind when I hear people talk about, oh, we saw these lights. I'm like, oh, that's cool, but why? Why are there lights on these craft?
You know, I think the reason why they have lights is the same reason we have beacons and markers on our aircrafts. I mean, it would suggest that if these UFOs have these lights, then there would be more of them, because these lights, they're there for navigation, to see and to be seen.
Interesting.
So that's what I'm thinking. So if, you know, if they have lights, and obviously there's multiple of these objects, you know, it's not just like a one random one flying around the universe. It would suggest that there would be multiples. Right. And so they may use them for communication and, you know, for visual purposes.
Yeah.
That was nice and easy. Wonderful. And it, like I said, you know, it's important for people to come forward. And I do get several military contractors come forwards. A lot of times they won't say what they do. You know, sometimes we keep people's names and jobs out of what they, you know, the show, for whatever reason. But yeah, I've had several contractors come forward, and sometimes they're talking about something that happened to them many years before and completely unrelated to what their job they were doing. But yeah, I've had a few.
Yeah, it, you know, when you're doing some contract work with the military, you generally see a lot of things that you won't see outside the base. You know, you'll see some of those classified planes.
Of course you do, yeah.
You'll see some things that the public doesn't get to see. And a lot of contractors have a lot of stories.
I bet they do. Yeah. And of course, you guys are seeing this, the technology that's not in the public domain or people are aware of for probably another 15, 20 years. So you're, you know, kind of lucky.
Yeah.
Especially if some of you guys have helped build them.
Yeah, those guys, they get to see it. I would just get to see whatever they're testing. My job as working with the Air Force, so that the runways would stay open. That was my job. So basically, you know, anything to do with keeping those runways open was my job. So
right, gotcha. Dan, did you enjoy it out there?
Yes, it was very nice. I have some really funny stories. I can share one if you like.
Yeah, be my guest.
Okay. There was a general. I'm not going to mention his name. He's a very famous guy, but he had a personal jet, and his jet had parked, and he went on about his business, you know, on the base. Well, it turns out his plane had a fuel leak. Well, what did they do? They call the fire department, and then they call the environmental group. So I'm the manager of the environmental group. So we all went to the flight line, and there's this thing called a red line. Now, the jet is parked behind the red line. You can't go behind the red line unless you have clearance, unless there's some type of emergency or whatever. Well, this was an emergency. So the fire chief called in and he said, hey, we're going in. We're going to clean this spill. So we all went in. After we got everything under control, my crew was left to clean it up. Well, the flight chief for the fire department called the tower and said, we got an all clear. That means everything's done. And they left. And we're still behind the red line cleaning. The next thing you know, we have the military police aiming guns at us and have us on the ground, put us in handcuffs. They told us we're not authorized to be in that zone. Of course, everybody complied. We just, you know, we didn't want to get shot. There's some little 18-year-old weapon of war in his hand aimed at you and it's loaded. Nobody's going to say anything. We just got on the ground. They called the staff sergeant. He came out there and he's like, get these guys out of the handcuffs and let them up and let them finish doing what they're doing. So I kind of had a laugh about it, but at the time, me and my crew, we were scared.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, stuff like that happened.
Yeah, I'd imagine. And yeah, you're right. You know, 18-year-olds with machine guns on site. Wonderful. Okay. Brian, I really appreciate you coming on, sharing that for our listeners.
Oh, you're welcome.
You enjoy your afternoon, okay? And keep in contact, and I'll talk soon.
Okay, you take care and try to stay cool. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye. That is all for this week. Keep updated and connected with the show on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And if you have an encounter that you'd like to share on the podcast, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com, or you can reach out to me via the contact page on my website at ufochroniclespodcast.com. A big thank you to Ian, Thomas, and Brian for sharing tonight, and thank you all for listening. I will be back next week. Till then, stay safe and keep watching the skies. Goodbye.